This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The mainstream center-right parties are getting the message that they need to be or look tougher on migration in order to get the votes that are now going to more radical alternatives.
That's Camino Mortera Martinez of the Center for European Reform on German politicians' motivation for plans to toughen migration laws. Details coming up also. Top diplomats from the Group of Seven announced a unified stance on the Israeli-Hamas war. And Mali's army says it carried out airstrikes on terrorist targets. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Today, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said something is clearly wrong with Israel's military operations in Gaza, given the number of civilian casualties. More than 10,000 residents of Gaza have died, most of them women, children, and elderly persons, since the conflict erupted last month. More than 1,400 Israelis have died, most of them on October 7th, when Hamas militants from Gaza attacked Israeli communities. Speaking to Reuters News, Guterres said, Israel must observe international laws of war and called for humanitarian aid to flow into Gaza. He also said that Hamas fighters have used civilians as human shields in its operations in Gaza. Also today, the International Committee of the Red Cross warned that hospitals in Gaza are running short of supplies. The ICRC said that a humanitarian convoy came under fire in Gaza City on Tuesday while on its way to deliver supplies to a hospital and the Palestinian Red Crescent. VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir is on the line with me now to update us on the latest from the UN headquarters. Welcome to African News Tonight, Margaret.
Thanks, Yehias, for having me on.
So, Margaret, the state of Israel's conflict with the Palestinians is nearly as old as the United Nations. But the latest conflict, this one, is causing a lot of havoc. Israel officials have called for the Secretary General to resign just a few weeks ago. So, Margaret, Secretary General Guterres is today again expressed his concern about the fighting in Gaza. What else have he and other UN leaders been saying in the past few days as the conflict continues?
Well, I think the top thing that the Secretary General and every UN official on down the chain has been calling for is for a humanitarian ceasefire. They need it for aid to go into Gaza, but also for the immediate and safe release of the hostages taken by Hamas. So this is the number one priority. Second, they're continuing to assist Palestinians in Gaza as much as they can. But as you said, it's getting harder every day because the amount of aid that Israel has allowed into Gaza via the border crossing with Egypt has really been a trickle in comparison to what's needed. There are 2.3 million people in Gaza. Now they're without jobs, without access to their bank. The shop shelves are empty. There's very little clean water. So they're really, really relying on humanitarian aid not to go hungry. And in the 2.5 weeks since Israel eased its siege on Gaza after the terror attack, only 650 trucks have been able to come into Gaza. And prior to that, there were commercial trucks and aid trucks of about 500 per day. So now when needs are escalating tremendously, there's just really not nearly enough supplies coming in. And the supplies are there, by the way. They're piled up at the border crossing in Rafah in Egypt and at El Arish airfield, which is an Egyptian airfield about 45 kilometers from the Rafah crossing. So there is aid to give the Gazans, but it's a question of getting the parties that need to consent to let it in. And if I could just tell you, one of the other really big concerns the UN has right now are about the people in northern Gaza and Gaza City, because the Gaza Strip has effectively been cut into two. The Israeli Defense Forces are in northern Gaza and encircled Gaza City, but yet there's still, the UN says, hundreds of thousands of people still in that part of Gaza. Some had gone south when they were told to evacuate by Israel, but then they were being bombed in the south, even though that was supposed to be a safe zone. So some of them went back north, where the fighting is much, much worse. And they have not received any aid supplies. And as of Tuesday, the UN said no bakeries are working in North Gaza due to the lack of fuel and wheat flour and the damage from the fighting. So, I mean, they can't even get bread. So it's become extremely severe there. The World Health Organization says doctors are conducting surgeries in hospitals in the north, including amputations, without anesthesia, because they just don't have medical supplies.
And Margaret,
so it's a really, really bad situation.
So several United Nations Security Council resolutions on the conflict have failed to pass. Are there any new votes expected this week in the council?
Yeah, so the council has been divided since day one of this crisis. They've tried four times to adopt a resolution calling for some sort of a humanitarian ceasefire or pause, but for different reasons about language in the text, it hasn't happened yet. There's a fifth attempt going on now. We're not expecting anything in terms of a vote imminently. I think the council has to be able to find a way to agree, or it's pointless for them to go in and fail again, because it's just destroying their credibility.
And the number of UN employees killed since the Israeli-Hamas conflict began is absolutely staggering, Margaret.
Can you talk about that today? It's up to 99 now, UNRWA staff. Many killed with their families in their homes. It's a very sad situation. The Secretary General said this is the most UN staff killed in a conflict situation ever, and it's happened in just a four-week period.
And what else do we need to know about the UN, Hamas, and Israel, Margaret? Anything you'd like to add?
Well, just that really, really, the UN cannot stop stressing enough this need for a pause. Now, we know that Prime Minister Netanyahu said no pauses till the hostages are released. That's his strong stance. But there are a lot of behind-the-scenes negotiations going on. United States, Qatar, other countries, Egypt, countries with influence over Hamas and Israel, are trying to find some way to get to this pause that is needed.
VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir, thank you for your input.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
Today, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and top diplomats from the Group of Seven announced a unified stance on the Israeli-Hamas war, condemning Hamas, supporting Israel's right to self-defense, and calling for humanitarian pauses to speed aid to desperate civilians in the Gaza Strip. Blinken met with his counterpart from Britain, Canada, France, Germany, Japan, and Italy in Tokyo before issuing a statement on their unified stance. Blinken said he also briefed his colleagues on talks with Israeli leaders on pauses and concrete steps on minimizing harm to Palestinians in Gaza. He said Israel had repeatedly said there is no going back to October 6th, the day before the Hamas attack. I spoke earlier with reporter Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem for an update on today's developments in the Israeli-Hamas conflict. So, what is the latest development today?
Well, there actually is an interesting development, which is that both Qatar and Egypt are reporting that they're very close to a partial deal, which would mean the release of 10 to 15 hostages in exchange for a 1 to 2 day ceasefire. Now, Israel is not confirming this, but has said that it is open to humanitarian pauses in exchange for the freedom of the hostages. Assumedly, those who would be freed would be non-Israeli nationals or the very old or people who were very wounded. But it's the first movement that we've seen on the hostage issue in close to 2 weeks. And in addition, the King of Thailand said a couple of days ago that there are 24 Thai hostages, that they're all, he has received, you know, information that they're all still alive and that they also are close to a release. Now, during that 1 to 2 day ceasefire, more humanitarian aid would get into Gaza. Israel is concerned, though, that also more equipment or things that Hamas needs would get in. Israel opened a humanitarian corridor from the north of Gaza to the south, and thousands of civilians who until now had not left the north of Gaza where their homes are, now given the heavy fighting that's been going on the last couple of days, have now left. There were several thousand yesterday and an additional several thousand today.
Wow. So Gaza's Hamas-run health ministry says more than 10,500 people have been killed in the territory since then, while the UN is warning of an increasingly dire humanitarian situation there. Talk to us about the way the UN is actually describing the situation.
Yes, I mean, it's very bad, and it seems to be getting worse. There is some humanitarian aid getting in, but you have tens of thousands of people sheltering in UN facilities. There's not enough food. There's not enough medicine. Apparently, the water problem is better than it was, but people are sleeping in the streets or crowded into, you know, four families crowded into one classroom in a UN school. The airstrikes are continuing. Israel says that it carries out airstrikes in the south of Gaza only when it identifies a specific Hamas target. But in the north of Gaza, I actually just came right now from the Gaza border, and I was at Kfar Azza, which is one of the kibbutzim that was run out, you know, overrun by Hamas on October 7th, and I think at least 62 people were killed and another bunch taken hostage, and I saw, you know, the evidence of this fighting and houses totally burnt and totally destroyed. And you hear the booms every few seconds of the Israeli artillery attacking Gaza from Israel. And they're very, very loud. And the first few times I really flinched. And then after about 15, 20 minutes, I kind of got used to it. But there's constant Israeli artillery fire on Gaza.
And U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and top diplomats, like I mentioned earlier, from the Group of Seven, announced a unified stance on the Israeli-Hamas war today. So Blinken even said he briefed his colleagues on talks with Israel leaders on pauses and concrete steps on minimizing harm to Palestinians in Gaza. So what is the response there to Secretary Blinken's comments and the G7 statements?
Well, I think Israel, you know, says it doesn't necessarily oppose a pause, but it has to get its hostages out. They say that that's also a humanitarian situation. And, I think Israeli officials feel like the world is forgetting that this all began with an unprovoked Hamas attack on, on Israel. Thousands of gunmen crossed the border, went into these civilian communities like the one I just described, Kfar Azza, and just murdered, you know, women and children in their beds. So Israel feels that, you know, Hamas is clearly the provocateur in this and that the world is kind of forgetting that. That said, there is concern over the rising civilian death toll. Israel has suggested that perhaps Gaza civilians could be housed temporarily in Egypt, in the Sinai Desert. Egypt has so far been not willing to take any Gaza refugees. Also, all of these people who live in North Gaza, they don't really have homes to go back to. Northern Gaza, Gaza City, whole neighborhoods have been destroyed. So it's not clear, you know, the winter is coming. Right now it's not that cold, but in another couple of weeks it's going to start getting cold. Where are these people going to live? How are they going to have electricity? Who's going to take care of them? So I think there is a growing concern. This isn't something that can be solved overnight.
Our reporter Linda Grandstein on the Israel-Hamas conflict, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
The Israeli-Hamas conflict in the Gaza Strip has left the African continent deeply divided, with some countries choosing to remain silent and others openly showing solidarity with either Israel or the Palestinians. Kenya, Ghana, and the Democratic Republic of Congo are among the African countries whose leaders have shown support for Israel despite growing global condemnation over rising civilian deaths in Gaza. David Monda, professor of international relations at City, New York University, explained this division in the African response to the war in Gaza to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
I think you can really explain it in terms of how the leadership in Accra, in Kinshasa, and in Nairobi perceive of the global dynamic. And they've actually come out very strongly, the three countries you mentioned here, the DRC and Ghana, to actually speak to their support for Israel. However, even within those countries, for example, in the context of Kenya, there's a lot of division and a lot of criticism of President Ruto's statement in support of Israel. Just over the weekend, the leader of the opposition, Raila Odinga, came out to condemn the Israeli assault on Gaza and some of the humanitarian crisis that you have there. So it's also important to add that even though these three countries made statements in support of Israel, and that there are constituencies within those countries that are also in opposition. It's not a monolithic perspective in terms of the response of these three countries to the crisis between Hamas and Israel. But we, as we've seen with most of the continent, it's divided the continent, but most countries have tried to take a neutral stance. In other words, try to hedge their bet so they don't want to appear to be either siding with the Palestinians on one hand slash Hamas, or to be siding with the Israelis. Most countries have tried to stay neutral. The AU, on the other hand, has also come out very strongly in terms of condemning Israeli action, as much as it's also tried to balance its position, but the AU as a voice for the continent has actually tended to be more sympathetic with the humanitarian situation and some of the killings that have been going on. So over 10,000 Palestinians right now have passed on, and the situation looks like it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Do African countries base their positions toward the war in Gaza on the level of reliance on Israel for obtaining weapons and technology?
They definitely do. And we have to also make a slight distinction here because, you know, when you talk of African countries, the North African countries tend to have more of a cultural affiliation, a broader religious affiliation with the Middle East. So historically, their involvement has also been a lot deeper in terms of the conflict. But if we then think about sub-Saharan Africa more broadly, a lot of these countries are really weighing their interactions with Israel, which has made significant inroads over the past 15, 20 years of its diplomatic roots in Africa. We've seen an expansion to over 35 countries that recognize Israel. As you've mentioned, Israel is a very strategic and important partner for security, for investment, for technology, for defense, for intelligent infrastructure, for trade, for a lot of these countries. So this also then creates this tension where a lot of countries might not want to isolate Israel, because taking a position against Israel by default also means creating tension between a particular country and the United States, which has historically also always wanted to strongly back Israel as its ally in the region. So very broadly, we see those regional distinctions. So we have North Africa obviously having the cultural and historical closeness with the Middle East, but also we have the sub-Saharan African context where many countries are smaller, have weaker economies that rely on Israeli investments and technology in agriculture and in the military spheres. And a lot of these countries do not want to go against the United States for obvious diplomatic and political and economic repercussions. We know AGOA is soon going to be renewed. The U.S. can sanction countries for opposing Israel through trade, for example, through AGOA. So a lot of the African countries have tended to be to want to be neutral. But there's a significant opinion, not only on the continent of Africa, but broadly internationally, that the humanitarian context, the escalation of the militarization of the conflict on Israel's part is really tilting global public opinion broadly in terms of sympathy towards the Palestinians. And I think that's something diplomats need to be very careful going forward, especially now that we saw the CIA director going to Israel, and we've had Antony Blinken trying to make some diplomatic moves within the Arab world. It's an interesting dynamic to see how Africa's hand will be played into the broader narrative of these tensions between Hamas and Israel.
That was David Monda, professor of international relations at City New York University, speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shenawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Germany has outlined plans to toughen migration laws and deport more failed asylum seekers in a sharp reversal of its recent migrant policies. As Henry Ridgewell reports, upcoming elections and the Israeli-Hamas conflict are sharpening the rhetoric around the migration.
230,000 people have claimed asylum in Germany in the first 9 months of this year, more than in the whole of 2022. With migrant shelters filling up, regional authorities complain that the costs are unsustainable. Chancellor Olaf Scholz says too many migrants are coming to Germany. He hosted the country's 16 state governors Monday and emerged from the meeting with a deal he claimed would cut migration. Scholz says he believes this is a historic moment. He says that in light of an unquestionably huge challenge with very large numbers of migrants and irregular migration, all the levels of the state have managed to cooperate closely, which is necessary. People expect this of us, he says.
I believe this is a historic moment as we sit here.
In light of an unquestionably huge challenge
with very large numbers of migrants and irregular migration, all the levels of the state have managed to cooperate closely, which is necessary. People expect this of us.
Und das ist auch notwendig. Das erwarten die Bürgerinnen und Bürger von uns, dass wir das tun.
The agreement will see the federal government pay states and municipalities $8,000 per refugee from next year. Benefits for asylum seekers will be cut. Scholz promised to speed up asylum decisions and make it easier to deport those who are refused refugee status. Temporary checks on the Polish, Czech and Swiss borders will remain, and the government has pledged tougher sentences for people smugglers. It's a stark turnaround from the policies of Scholz's predecessor, Angela Merkel. In 2015, Germany opened its borders to more than a million refugees. Scholz has an eye on upcoming European elections, scheduled for June next year, says analyst Camino Mortera Martinez.
The mainstream sort of center-right parties are getting the message that they need to be or look tougher on migration in order to get the votes that are now going to more radical alternatives, like alternative for Germany.
Mortera Martinez says the Israel-Hamas conflict is stoking political rhetoric around immigration.
I think it is very dangerous to sort of like get into this idea that, you know, there's going to be a massive wave of refugees. This is the kind of discourse that, you know, benefits populists and the far right.
Meanwhile, Italy, which receives hundreds of thousands of migrants every year, signed a deal Monday to build asylum processing centres in Albania. Italy's prime minister said it could be a blueprint for deals between the European Union and non-member countries. Critics say such plans could breach international law. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhid in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Shogun Chung, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.